How you doing, everybody? Welcome into Sports Talk on a Thursday. Scott Beatty here alongside Matt Daniels. We're live at Scotty's Brewhouse in Champaign, 2001 South Neal. Got a packed show for you. Come on out. It's a sunny day, which is unusual to say in January.
The sun is still out.
Yeah, last week, I think when you were here, it was kind of darker. Yeah. With the sun out, it just did a little extra step.
Well, you know, that's what happens when Illinois basketball gets a Big Ten win, Scott.
That may be the bigger energizer around here right now, because I tell you what, we as reporters and journalists, and if you want to call me that, you know, we're supposed to be neutral, but it's a lot more fun to cover a team that wins, and everyone, you can't help but feel for that team that needed that win.
Well, yeah, and they almost blew it last night, too, in the final minute. I don't know what Mark Allstark was doing after he missed that free throw and almost got a foul there with 0.1 second on the
clock. I think everybody on Twitter went, now, if the Illini could just inbound the ball, ..
Yeah, but they pulled through and you know, made some adjustments there in the second half that paid dividends for them. And Tijon Lucas really was a spark last night. I thought off the bench he looked like kind of his old self, what he was playing earlier in the season, and he gave them an added dimension. And Trent Frazier's confidence keeps growing. And LeRon Black had another steady game. And lo and behold, Illinois got a Big Ten win, Scott.
It's good for them. And, of course, most folks would say, if you're going to get a win over somebody, go ahead and get it over Indiana as opposed to anybody else in the Big Ten.
They don't like those candy stripes around here.
Indeed. So we'll talk more about that as we go along. Coming up in a few minutes, Darren Fletcher is here, former big league star and Illinois baseball star as well, still makes his home here in East Central.
Eating his dinner right now at Scotty's.
That's right. He's taking it in, using the opportunity to dine with the family. So look forward to talking with him. We'll touch on a few different baseball topics with him, but he crossed paths with at least a couple of new Hall of Famers, so we'll get his thoughts on that among some other things. Probably the biggest sports news of the day around here, though, is more shuffling of Illinois football coaching. Last week it was additions to the staff. Mm-hmm. Today we learned about a couple of subtractions. Nathan Shielhouse leaving to go be the running backs coach at Iowa State. He was part of the coaching staff. He wasn't officially a coach. He was an offensive analyst, however you want to define that. But then he used to be a running backs coach. And then Mike Fair leaving to go to the Indianapolis Colts as the defensive line coach there. That confirmed by sources that spoke with you. So more hires for Lovie Smith to be made on the heels of hiring Rod Smith and Corey Patterson as the tight ends coach. So what does this all mean, Matt?
Yeah, they've got two assistant coaching spots to fill because of that 10th assistant coach that will join the staff later this season, and the new NCAA rule allowing 10 assistants on a particular staff. And now with Mike Fair leaving to go to the Colts, he'll coach under Josh McDaniels, who's, you know, reported to be the Colts' new hire once the Super Bowl ends with the Patriots and next week. But yeah, it's kind of interesting to see Fair leave. He'd been there three seasons, was brought on board by Tim Beckman back in the winter of 2015, and stayed on through the 2015 season when all the turmoil hit the program and Beckman was fired and Bill Cubitt was promoted to interim coach. And I know the players really loved and respected him, and Jihad Ward really credits him for his rise at Illinois into a second-round draft pick by the Oakland Raiders in 2016. And then Dwan Smoot became a third-round pick in the 2017 draft by the Jaguars, and he credits a lot of his work to Fair, and stayed on. When the coaching change happened, he had some background with Lovie Smith, coached with Lovie in Chicago and in Tampa Bay as well, and stayed on, but was a co-defensive coordinator first in 2015, and then everyone can think back to all the coaching turmoil that Illinois went through, was actually promoted to defensive coordinator when Bill Cubitt was named the head football coach for a brief few months, and then when he was fired, Lovie kept him on board, but moved him back to a defensive line coach, the position he held the last two seasons. But it's just another opportunity, I think, for him to get back to the NFL and be a position coach. That's kind of that was his background a lot before he came to Illinois. He spent most of his professional career in the NFL, whether it was as a position coach or as a scout. And now another chance for him to get in the league, and we'll see what happens with that.
Coaching changes happen all the time. Oh, yeah. But what the Illinois football program has gone through in the season they just had and the number of transfers and all that, there is a little question that comes to mind is, are guys not happy here, or is it just pursuing opportunities that present themselves?
Yeah, I think it's you look back to the two changes Lovie Smith made right before Christmas and firing Garrick McGee and Paul Williams. I think those are more performance-based. I think with Fair, it was just an opportunity for him to go coach in the NFL. You look back to last season, too, Tim McGargle, who was on Lovie Smith's first staff as a linebackers coach, left to go be an assistant with the Packers where he was at this past season. Now McGargle is actually going to be an assistant coach at Northwestern for this upcoming season. But coaching changes happen quite a bit, and, Lovie Smith's got a he's not like I think most coaches where, year three, that's kind of like the cutoff date for, okay, whether you're having success or not. I think he's got a long rope here at Illinois just because Josh Whitman has shown full confidence in him and is willing to go through this process of trying to rebuild the program, and it's taking quite a bit of time, and it may take even longer to get that to get Illinois football back to a consistent winner down the road. But yeah, I think it's just guys see what's out there, and like I said, with Fair, his background's in the NFL, and I think this move makes sense for him.
With Nathan, he wasn't a full-fledged coach, mm-hmm. and that opportunity presented itself. Now, I think once. I don't know if Nathan Shieldhouse wanted to be the quarterback's coach, but once Rod Smith was announced as both OC and quarterback's coach, it may have maybe have given Nathan an opportunity to say, I gotta go somewhere else. And you hate to see him leave here, mm-hmm. because he's so beloved around here.
Oh, exactly.
But at the same time, you're excited for him. He gets to step into a role he's done before as a running backs coach and as the offensive leader all time in yardage for Illinois. He certainly knows how to move with his feet.
Yeah. No, he's beloved around here just by Illinois fans and also players currently in the program and players that used to be a part of the program just because for four seasons, he was kind of the face of Illinois football. Led him to back-to-back bowl wins in 2010, 2011, and then endured a coaching change from Ron Zook to Tim Beckman and dealt with the struggles that happened on the field, but responded his senior season with a breakout season, in Bill Cubitt's offense, threw for the almost 3,200 yards and really transformed himself as a quarterback. And, he took a year off after he graduated, did some ministry work down in Louisville. He wasn't sure if he wanted to get back into coaching. I remember talking to him towards the tail end of his career, and he was asked several times, what's in the future? And he ruled out coaching, right away, but, the bug hit him, and he came back to Illinois and got bumped up to a running backs coach right before the 2015 season with everything that happened at the end of Tim Beckman's era and then the start of Bill Cubitt's season, and then stayed on as an offensive analyst where he wasn't actually on the field, during games or anything like that, but he contributed kind of in a behind-the-scenes role, and he's got ties to the Iowa State program. Matt Campbell is the Iowa State coach, was former offensive coordinator at Toledo under Tim Beckman, so I'm sure Beckman and Campbell have talked about Nathan at times. And then Alex Golish, a former Illinois assistant coach who actually coached Nathan during his playing career and then was on staff with him in 2015. He's at Iowa State. Aaron Hillman, who was the strength and conditioning coach at Illinois from 2012 to 2015, he's a director of player development at Iowa State. So there's some natural built-in ties there, and it's a chance for Nathan to be a full-time coach, and that's what he wants to do, and Iowa State seems to kind of be on the up and up in the Big 12, and it's a chance to get his feet wet and, go from there.
Well, we'll see what happens now. If you are listening right now and you are either have defensive coaching in the background or, want to be an offensive analyst,
sure.
I think they're hiring, so you might want to get your resume in.
That's true.
I know there's a lot of those guys
around.
Both
are big losses for the Illinois football program. Just you take a guy like Nathan Shieldhouse, who just kind of epitomized the program for the better part of the past decade, and no one that I've known has ever spoken ill of Nathan and what he's done in either a coaching role or kind of just as an ambassador role for the program. And like I said earlier, too, Mike Fair was really beloved by the players that he coached on the defensive line and made a lot of them a lot better during his time here at Illinois.
Well, the one concern is this seems late in the game.
Yeah.
But there's other changes going on around. But with this recruiting window closing up soon, I guess a position like Mike Ferry isn't as crucial as the defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Like Hardy Nickerson.
It's crucial in the sense that you want, if you're a defensive lineman, you want to know who your position coach is going to be. But Illinois has done a decent job so far with filling up most of their needs in the class of 2018. And
I would think a guy like Hardy Nickerson is pretty well connected. Obviously, Lovey is too.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it goes back to more just on the recruiting front. It's not – ideal timing, but Illinois has lost assistant coaches before. I remember A.J. Ricker left as offensive line coach back in, I think, 2014 to go be the offensive line coach at Missouri, which was his alma mater, an opportunity he said he couldn't pass up at the time, and that was about 3 weeks before training camp started. So Illinois had to scramble and fill that position, eventually with Tom Bratton for that season. But it's not the end of the world. I don't think that to have these – the timing-wise part of it, to have these happen here in late January, I'd imagine they'd have someone in here in, 2 to 3 weeks, if not. I don't envision the defensive line coach position to not be filled by the time spring practice is starting in early March.
We are off and running here on Sports Talk, Scotty's Brew House. It's your home for beers, burgers, and sports. And also every Thursday here at Scotty's, you can enjoy all day $2 well drinks, half price cheese pizza, and $2 cans of select beers. So come on by. We're here till 6 o'clock, along with Ed Bond.
Where is Ed?
He's hiding in the back. He's making sure the sound is good at every part of the restaurant. He's checking it. And when we come back, Darren Fletcher is here, former baseball all-star and Illini great as well. And we'll talk with him about where he's at. How's life going? thoughts on the Hall of Fame, all that good stuff. As baseball season is not too far around the corner for both the Illini and the big leagues. So that's coming up, and we'll have more here. Scotty's Brew House and Sports Talk. It's Sports Talk here on a Thursday at Scotty's Brew House, 2001 South Neal. Scotty's Brew House is the perfect place to take on all your favorite sports teams with craft beer, sports bar, 36 beers on tap, and 64 large screen TVs to watch any sporting event of your choice. We are so pleased to be joined by East Central Illinois native Darren Fletcher, who played baseball here at Illinois and then went on to have a cup of coffee in the bigs, right?
Not a Hall of Fame career by any means, but
hey, I was there. I was there for 10 years or 12, something like that.
You still hit 124 more home runs than most of us, so
right,
in the big leagues.
Right.
It's great to see you. How are you?
Good. Doing good.
Yeah.
Doing good. Yeah. I'm out here to eat and hang out with you, Scott. Hang out with Scott at Scotty's Brew House.
That's always the draw.
That's the pitch.
Yeah, there's no relation. Yesterday, Hall of Famers were announced for the 2018 class. Vladimir Guerrero, one of them, and you would have crossed paths a little bit in Montreal, right?
You know what? I was there when Vlad had his first base hit. You know, he was there. I think he came up in 96. So I was with the Expos in 96.
Was it a pitch 50 feet in front of
home
plate?
Yeah, he's always a bad ball hitter. I don't know. I do remember that he came up in 96, and I was there. And in 97, too, he played quite a bit, and that was my last year with the Expos.
Yeah, I have a sense when a guy like him comes up and you go, well, here's a guy that's going to be really successful and maybe a Hall of Famer. I mean, what can you tell about a guy when he first breaks in?
Well, I think the first thing I noticed, he had a tremendous arm from the outfield. You know, he was a great thrower of the baseball from the outfield. You know, he knew the kid was going to hit at some point. Didn't know whether he was going to strike out a lot or whether he looked like he was going to hit for power, but obviously he turned out to be a great player and a Hall of Famer. I think he won a MVP 1 year, mm-hmm. and he was a great hitter. He was a great hitter. I mean, I played with him. I played against him. It was one of those guys where when you were going over the scouting report, you really didn't know how to pitch the guy because he could handle a ball at his nose and he can handle a ball at his toes. So he was a quality hitter. And I think I saw last night he was the third Dominican-born guy that's been in the Hall of Fame with Pedro Martinez. Mm-hmm. I think it was Vlad Guerrero. Maybe Juan Marichal might be the third.
Sounds right.
Yeah.
What was your reaction, Darren, just to Jim Thome, another Illinois native over near Peoria, getting in on the first ballot, first time he was up for election?
Yeah, we were watching when they announced it. I had a little get-together at my place last night. Just a few guys showed up, and we were watching TV. Mm-hmm. And, there was a little bit of a argument on whether or not, you know, should the DH be, mm-hmm. you know, is it a position that mm-hmm. you should, that if you're just exclusively a DH, should you go into the Hall of Fame? And, you know, our you know, my point was, is that he if you're going to make a lineup out and it was an American League lineup, I think you'd have Jim Thome as a DH during those times in the 90s. So, mm-hmm. you know, well deserving, hit over 600 home runs, great guy. Yeah. He actually came to Champaign, you know, and spoke at the hot stove banquet mm-hmm. for Dan Hartlib and the Illini team, I think in 04 or 05. Really, you know, giant of a man, but a gentle spirit. And a guy from Peoria. Mm-hmm. He actually went to Illinois Central College there mm-hmm. in Peoria to play basketball. Went to the JUCO to try to play basketball and ended up playing a little baseball. And then
worked out well for him.
You played some basketball too, right?
Yeah, I played a little basketball at Oakwood, yeah.
But was it always clear that it was baseball was the path?
Honestly, if you want to know the truth, yeah, probably baseball. But I always liked basketball. I was a big Larry Bird fan. And growing up in small town Illinois, the thing that we did was we'd get together and as friends, we'd get together and play pickup basketball all the time.
Yeah.
So I've always been a big basketball fan.
Yeah.
Enjoy, obviously, baseball too, but I've always liked basketball and still keep up. You know, I know where you're going with it. Oakwood, and Oakwood's mm-hmm. been playing well. They won the county yep. this past weekend, and the girls won it. So we had, you know, Oakwood's been doing pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, you got, I tell my buddy, you know, Cameron Lee. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know, Cameron made it to the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And Tim Lee is one of my close personal friends since I was a child.
Principal at Oakwood High School.
Principal at Oakwood. And Cameron, his son, you know, made it to the NFL. And, you know, you got me as a former mm-hmm. baseball player, my dad. Casey played a yeah. little independent ball. And mm-hmm. Cameron, I said, in a little town of Newtown, I think per yeah. capita we've got more professional baseball players than anybody in the country, or any professional athletes than anybody in the country.
What was it like for you? Take us back to your MLB debut, going from a small town in Oakwood. Obviously, you played here at the University of Illinois, but what was kind of going through your head before your first big league game? Did you have to sit there and pinch yourself, or were you too nervous, too amped up to even think too much about it?
Well, you know what? I got called up, and I didn't play for a while. Mm-hmm. I think it was about a week before I actually got into the game with the Dodgers. So by the time that my name was called to come up there and hit, I was ready. I was wanting it. He was like, you know, am I going to get a chance here? So it was about 10 days into it, and I was able to – I got a base hit in my first at-bat in San Diego. So mm-hmm. it was, you know, long time ago. But
the Cubs announced their – non-roster invitees to spring training, and one of the guys that people are starting to pay attention to is a veteran catcher named Chris Jimenez. And the reason everyone's paying attention to that is because he was a catcher for Yu Darvish with the Rangers. And some people are wondering if the Cubs are trying to use that as a little bit extra bait to get Yu Darvish to come. Did you as a catcher ever become somebody's guy? Did you ever relish that role as being the primary receiver for a pitcher?
Yeah, I mean, I've had this question asked me before, and yeah, I've been someone's guy, and I have been not someone's guy. So I understand it, and I understand that, you know, a lot of pitchers like to throw a particular guy, and they become comfortable. But in my opinion, I think these guys should be able to throw to whoever the manager puts behind there. You know, albeit there is a, you know, the pitcher catcher relationship is a funny one, and there's a comfort, you know, you got to be comfortable with the guy. But I've been on the other end of it, where I've had a couple, you know, pitchers that didn't want to particularly throw to me. So I don't know whether they're playing it up or not. I don't know. Pitchers are half crazy, right? they always got to have somebody hold their hand through the whole deal and all that. So yeah.
That's why the catchers end up being the managers.
Yeah, exactly. And the catchers finally, and then they can finally tell these guys, like I did when I was playing, you know what, go out there and throw strikes and do your thing and let the athletes take over.
Darren Fletcher is with us here on Sports Talk. We're live at Scotty's Brewhouse.
Obviously, your son Casey played here at Illinois as well. Was on the 2015 team that had so much success winning the Big Ten and making it to the Super Regional and NCAA tournament. What's Casey up to these days?
He's a volunteer assistant for Illinois with Hartlib. Yeah, so he's coaching first base, helping with the outfielders, doing a little bit of catching stuff too, helping Adam Chris with some of the hitting, mm-hmm. you know. But he's enjoying it.
Yeah.
Played a couple seasons, like you said, in Joliet for the Joliet Slammers in the independent league. And Dan asked him at the beginning of last year on whether Casey would consider retiring from baseball and helping him out. And actually, Casey and I thought about it, and we were bouncing around, and Casey said, I want to get into coaching anyway, so let's just go ahead and do it now. Couldn't be a better spot. You know, he's being able to live at home and U of I and all that. And Dan's been great to him. It's a great program, and I think they've got a chance this year to win some ball games. I really do.
Well, I remember from last year, the lineup is great, and if the starting pitching comes through, like you said, they could be a contender in the top half of the Big Ten.
I think they've got some pitchers. You haven't seen those names from last year because they were redshirt or they're the transfers. But Casey says there's a kid from Eastern that could do some pitching, and then there's a kid they got from Louisville. So, you know, that's the key in anything. The pitchers are you've got to throw strikes and you got to hit. But, you know, that year that they did so well in 2015, they had such a strong starting three for the Big Ten, and the guy that would be pitching midweek in 2015 would have been a starter for anybody else during Big Ten weekend. So they were just flush with pitching. So
what was that season like for you as a dad slash fan? Were you more nervous watching them than playing?
We had a great time as a family. We had a great time watching them. You know, the group of families that they put together, or the group of kids and families, you know, we were traveled everywhere. So enjoyed it. It was for me, honestly, it was one of the more enjoyable baseball seasons I've ever been around, and that was even me playing. Yeah. It was really fun to watch those kids play. They were very good.
Well, the spark that was around the community and the extra seats that they had to roll in for the regionals and all that stuff, it was a lot of fun. And there's a hunger here to watch good baseball. I think there's a good market for it. So maybe I'm biased because, you know, I've been with the program and it's my favorite sport, but I just think that it's the rise and the elevation too of college baseball has been pretty interesting. I don't know how is it viewed when you were playing versus where it is now, because I think, correct me if I'm wrong, do you think there's more guys going through the college route first before the pros, at least from the States?
Yeah, I don't know. I think the college players are obviously a lot more ready for the big leagues when they come out of college than they do high school. And there's certain organizations that like to just take college players, especially college pitchers, because they feel that they can come up quickly and help the big league club, you know, right away. You know, I don't know. As far as what the feeling was like when I played here in the 80s to what it is now, I think it's gotten better. You know, there's more fans out there. I mean, I remember playing some Big Ten weekends where maybe a couple hundred fans watching us go against Iowa, and the, you know, weather is 35 degrees and it's snowing and the wind's blowing in at old Illinois Field where the Beckman Institute's at. It wasn't the greatest setup in the world out there on the corner of Wright and University.
So
where they're at now, even though, you know, the baseball, or Dan thinks that, and it probably should be, that this place here needs to be upgraded, but I still think it's got a nice feel to it.
Sure, it does.
And they draw well, and it's free too.
Yeah.
Anyway, people are walking in on a Saturday, Sunday, and it's a beautiful day, and you know, you can take you know, a family of five or six, bring them out to the ball game and enjoy watching baseball. And I think the seats are good. Turf plays well. You know, I think it's a neat little setup. Now, whether Big Ten baseball will ever become a revenue sport for the universities, I don't know. It is, I think, now starting to be that way with the Southern schools.
Yeah.
But I don't know about the Big Ten. But you'll see.
I know Casey went the junior college route initially out of Oakwood, went to Kankakee. But how was his recruitment to Illinois different than yours at all? And maybe share some stories about your decision to come to Illinois and what that process was like coming out of Oakwood.
Well, I mean, I wasn't, you know, I was a small-town kid and was starting to earn a name for myself a little bit playing EI baseball. And it was a league in the area that's still there. There was basically a men's league. And I was just a boy playing in it. And I was playing pretty well. And I think that's where Tom Deedon, that was the coach at that time, saw me. And so, I mean, you know, but there wasn't like I had a handful of scholarships offers out of high school. I always wanted to come to Illinois. You know, so as soon as the head coach, Tom Deedon at the time, you know, said that we got a scholarship for you, I jumped on it.
It's a family thing, right?
Yeah, my dad went here and all that, and it's close to home. And I've been an Illini fan since way back. I've been an Illini fan since, you know, Perry Range and Derek Harper and, you know, that whole group. I mean, I was I think Dad and I were at the game when Eddie Johnson hit the
shot against
Michigan State in what, 79?
Yeah.
So wanted to come here. So as far as Casey's recruitment, junior college, you know, you see a lot of kids around here. They end up having to go to junior college, you know. But it's a gritty group. These JUCO kids, and they play pretty hard. But you know, Casey was playing pretty well, and Dan brought him over here. You know, he didn't have a lot of offers. Yeah. Dan was just a walk-on.
He ended up being a pretty key contributor in his school. And, you know, you talked about him going into coaching. That's never easy. At some point, you know, so some athletes, their bodies tell them, hey, you have to shut it down because of injury or whatever. But at other points, you have to make that decision. Am I done doing what I can do in the prime of my athleticism in order to pursue other things? That has to be a tough decision.
Yeah, well, he wants to coach. You know, so, and, you know, Casey, when you're, it's a long way to go when you're in independent baseball to get to the big leagues. And I think that he knew he wasn't going to be a big league baseball player. So it's like, well, you know, why not go ahead and start doing what I wanted to do anyway, and let's start it now as opposed to waiting a couple more years.
Are there any catchers now in the big leagues that you enjoy watching just from a casual perspective?
I don't know. I mean, you know, the young catchers like Matheny and Girardi, you know, those guys. Those are managers now, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly.
Cranky. See, I remember when those guys were coming up, you know. Now they're the managers. I don't know. I mean, you know, not really. I watch golf. I don't watch baseball.
Are you glad that Tiger's back?
I am glad the Tiger's back. Yeah. I really am. Okay. I'm really glad the Tiger's back. But I was watching the show. Have you seen the clip where the dude threw his putter cover at his caddy? That's a bad move. But, you know, I like baseball. You know, I followed in the stands. I don't watch it every day. Mm-hmm. You know, playoff baseball is really was really fun. And really watched it closely when the Cubs, you know, won 2 years ago. So that was kind of fun. But I watch the Blue Jays. I usually go up to Toronto once a year and watch a couple games. This year I'm actually going to Montreal. You know, Montreal has been trying to get, you know, an expansion or someone to move up there again, you know, try to have an expo team. And every year at the end of spring training, the Toronto Blue Jays play a couple games in the old Big O in Montreal. And actually they're playing the Cardinals. So I'm going to go up for a two-game series in Montreal, Blue Jays playing the Cardinals.
Nice.
And I'm just going to go out, hang out, and watch the game. And I haven't been to Montreal in a long time, and there's a guy that's having a fundraiser, a banquet deal, and he asked me to come up and, you know, hang out and be a part of it. So actually myself, John Wetland, Kenny Hill, Rusty Staub's going up, a guy named Ellis Valentine, if you can remember that name. Mm-hmm. So Larry Parrish. So we're all going to go up there and do a charity banquet and then watch the games.
This seems to be the most serious effort in recent times to get a team back into Montreal. Did you enjoy being in that? You spent almost a dozen years playing in Canada between Montreal and Toronto.
About 10 years, but yeah, Montreal's there for 6 years. They're going to need a new stadium.
Yeah.
The bottom line, and the problem is that it's kind of one of these, you know, chicken or the egg. Mm-hmm. Are they going to be able to get the team first and then build the stadium? I think they're going to have to build the stadium first and then just sit on it and hopefully draw somebody up there, because I don't think Major League Baseball will move up there again at the Big O. They're going to have to see something, an investment in some downtown.
We always heard that Andre Dawson would have been even better if his knees hadn't had to endure that surface up there in Montreal. Was it a hard surface on you, too?
Yeah, it was an old turf. You know, back in the 80s and 90s, they had that old turf, and now this field turf, obviously the football team plays on, baseball team in Illinois plays on, and everyone plays on in the big leagues, where it's got that crushed rubber in there, much more soft. It's just much easier on your legs and your extremities. So, yeah, but I mean, you know, my career, I spent it on the dirt anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't on turf.
Knees were going to be worn down anyway, right?
I was playing in the dirt most of my career.
Well, Darren, we really appreciate you coming out. It's good to catch up, talk baseball and other things. I know we'll be seeing you around the yard for Illinois baseball, if not anywhere else, but you're always welcome to stop by.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me, guys.
Darren Fletcher here, former MLB star and Illinois baseball star as well. And it's Sports Talk. We're live at Scotty's Brew House. Come on out. We're here till 6 o'clock. And we'll be back right after this. Live at Scotty's Brewhouse, it's Sports Talk here on DWS. Another Thursday special here. $4 pints, $10 Bud Light pitchers. That's not the pitchers we were just talking about. That's,
oh,
you know,
funny,
the containers of the beverage. Bonus Big Ten basketball tonight. We have that coming for you at the top of the hour. Michigan taking on Purdue. You can hear that. And Larry Clisby on the call from the Purdue Boilermaker Sports Network. All right. What is the thing, Matt, that you hate the most when you go to a major league, NFL, NHL, NBA game? What's the most annoying thing about it?
It's a great question, Scott.
Not the experience, but if you want a hot dog, it's going to cost.
It costs about $20 for a hot dog.
Right. Well, the Atlanta Falcons had lowered their prices this year to make them affordable concessions.
I knew that.
And it's apparently paid off. So I saw this article today at ESPN. The spending is up because of it. Who would have thought?
Makes sense.
Who would have thought? Although when you're captive, I think that's the whole thing. They know they can get you. All right, fine. I'll spend the $10 to get a beer or whatever it is.
Yeah, I know. I went to a Cardinals game with my dad last summer, and we got two hot dogs and two Cokes, and I think it cost us $29.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the tickets and the parking, the whole thing. It's expensive.
It
you
is.
Know.
Very true.
Yeah. So I hope this becomes a trend for a lot of other franchises. Would say, let's make fan-friendly prices for the concessions. Watch the volume go up.
Yeah.
And watch people not have irritation from leaving the ballpark. But, of course, there's a lot of things you can do around here for a lot cheaper. I mean, Darren was just talking about going to a ball game for free, and you're going to, it's a few bucks for a Coke and a hot dog or whatever it is. So, all right, Illinois basketball last night, we touched on this. They get the win over Indiana. And really, the question for me was, what would the effort from Monday night's performance against Michigan State translate into? Because it was overall for this team a decent effort against a very good Michigan State program. And when you come up with a loss, what does that tell you? What does that teach you? And they decided to use that as a springboard into a fairly decent effort against Indiana, although both teams really tried hard not to score in the second half. I think there was an 8-minute stretch where neither team had a field goal.
Yeah, Illinois put forth a great effort against Michigan State on Monday night at State Farm Center, and you saw that in the defensive intensity, and Michigan State had a tendency to turn the ball over, but turning the Spartans over 25 times certainly kept Illinois in that game. Just kind of went through a lull there at the start of the second half that really became the difference in the game. And then last night, Indiana jumped out on them early and led throughout much of the first half. And then went into halftime. And Illinois played pretty poorly in the first 20 minutes. And then just seemed to find another gear there in the second half. And like I said earlier, I think Tijon Lucas really provided that spark in the second half. And with Brett Underwood kind of going to a different starting five to start the second half, you're looking for anything that kind of works at this juncture in the season. And he found the right combination, the right lineup combination, and it certainly paid off for the Illini. And having Kipper Nichols, he didn't score 27 points against Indiana like he did Monday night.
No, he's not going to do that.
He was steady offensively, hit a big three late in the second half that made it a 6-point game there. And then Illinois just the clock ran out, so Illinois won the game, because if the game would have gone on for a little bit more, I don't know if the Hoosiers might have pulled left Champaign with kind of a win there at the final second.
What was interesting about that lineup was there's a – to put Finke and Black and Kipper on the floor together, I don't think that's something Underwood has wanted to do until yesterday. I think he was really rolling the dice, and – of course, Black and I think Kipper were both playing with four fouls towards the end. What in there, do you trade off at this point with who you're going to bring off the bench? Because now that really leaves you Eboy Bodine in your reserve. At the same time, he hadn't used a lot of Trent Frazier and Tijon Lucas in the backcourt together either. So that's an interesting move. Do you move that way to that starting five? And again, Brad Underwood is saying, we're the only ones that are talking about the starting five. And I get that, but at the same time, you generally want your best five on the floor, your best unit on the floor to start the ball game.
Yeah, and I think just the foul trouble last night with Mark Smith really hindered him. You know, he had that a basket early and then got into foul trouble, and then that put him solidly on the bench. And, you know, Damonte Williams didn't play all that much last night either. And I think you're just – with the way this season has gone for Illinois, I think he's just trying to find the right lineup combinations no matter where they may be. And he's shown – Underwood's shown many times this season he's quick to – you know, do almost a whole line change.
Well, he did it again.
Exactly.
Last night.
You know, I think four of the five starters were out within the first 5 minutes of the game, and you just got to find that right combination. And last night, you know, Tijon and Kipper Nichols really provided that spark for Illinois in the second half, and I think it speaks to how that effort on Monday night was rewarded on Wednesday night, because I think probably a lot of Illinois fans were thinking, okay, they're down six at halftime. Indiana kind of had their way with them. You know, Juwan Morgan was going off for a boatload of points, and you were kind of anxious to see how they would respond to that deficit at halftime. And, you know, they responded the right way, and then, you know, with about a minute left, you thought, okay, this one's in the bag. They're good to go. And then you realize you're watching Illinois basketball and you're never really sure what's going to happen. And then the final minute ensued, and Indiana had a shot there at the end to win the game.
We're back to wrap things up in just a moment. We're live at Scotty's Brew House, 2001 South Neal in Champaign. Sports Talk here on this Thursday.
Can the Blackhawks turn things around and contend for the Stanley Cup? I'm Jason Gotch, and the Gotch Files are next.
This is a taxpayer alert. Illinois' pension crisis is crushing the state, but a solution is right under state lawmakers' noses. For years, thousands of state university employees in Illinois have chosen to enroll in a 401k-style retirement plan that take politicians out of the retirement business, protect taxpayers, and give government workers a retirement they can control. To learn more, go to illinoispolicy.org. Brought to you by the Illinois Policy Institute.
I'm Jason Gotch with the Gotch Files. This isn't what Blackhawks fans are used to. The Hawks currently have the fourth fewest points in the Western Conference, and they have lots of work to do if they're going to make the playoffs for a 10th consecutive season. Blackhawks forward Brandon Saad was recently asked what the team needs to do to turn things around.
It's really just relax and take it one game at a time. You know, regardless of the standings, you can't change anything except taking care of your games one game at a time. You have no easy games in this league, and any given night you can pull out a win. So really it's just focusing on the task in hand.
So can the Blackhawks find a way into the playoffs and make a run at another Stanley Cup? Making the playoffs looks unlikely, but winning another cup won't happen this year. The Hawks simply aren't good enough. While Patrick Kane has been great as usual and Corey Crawford has been outstanding in goal when healthy, other problems look insurmountable. With the exception of Kane and Crawford, the Hawks' core hasn't played up to par all season. Jonathan Toews looks more like a third-line center than a future Hall of Famer. Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook are having down seasons, and the young defensemen look shaky, plus the power play is non-existent. Add all that up, and the biggest question for the Hawks may be the future of Coach Joel Quenneville, who could be the fall guy after the season. With another installment of the Gotch Files, I'm Jason Gotch.
High school basketball on Friday night. The Central Memorial will have it for you at 7:30. Join me, Scott Beatty, and Evan Kahn. Tune in or stream at WDWS.com. 5:58 Sports Talk here at Scotty's Brew House, 2001 South Neal in Champaign. We're here most every Thursday for the rest of the Big Ten basketball season, and save for when there's any conflicts. So come on out here for the rest of these Thursdays, and as they're available, try to get some cool guests out too. It's great to have Darren Fletcher here with us. You just heard about tomorrow night's basketball game that we'll be covering. Central hosting Peoria, and Dan Ruffin is the head coach out there. He's got some little bit of unique history.
Yeah, Daniel Ruffin, his son, was a point guard at Peoria Central, and early 2000s when they won a couple state titles with Sean Livingston, and then was a point guard at Bradley when they went to the Sweet 16 in the mid-2000s, 2006, I believe, and was the he's on the staff now with his dad, and I'm sure you'll see him at Combs Gym tomorrow night.
Yeah, also tomorrow night, Colin Likas will be out at Danville. Caleb Griffin going to make his announcement about where he's going to play.
Yeah, the kicker for Danville football. I know Illinois got some interest there, and he plays basketball for the Vikings too, and he's going to come out announcing his college decision by what socks he has on.
That'll be cool. That'll be cool. All right, we're back in studio tomorrow night, Matt. We'll talk with Bob Osmussen about these football changes, and we'll see what else comes along as well.
Sounds good. Thanks, Scott.
Thanks much to Darren Fletcher, our guest. Our on-site producer engineer is Ed Bond. In studio, it's Evan Kahn. We have bonus Big Ten basketball coming up. You'll hear Michigan at Purdue. Tip-off is just a few minutes away, and we have another sports talk tomorrow night at 5 o'clock. Thanks, everybody here at Scotty's Brewhouse for hosting and for coming on out. Thanks most of all to you for listening. It's News Talk 1400 WDWS, Champaign-Urbana, a News Gazette media station. Stay tuned for Big Ten bonus basketball. Good night, everybody.